This special podcast episode is sponsored by Lloyds Banking Group and produced by Politico Studio. When we think of homelessness, what's the first thing that comes into our minds? A young man sitting on a pavement, perhaps, asking for money? Maybe someone huddled up in a sleeping bag in the shelter of a tall building? All of that's very visible, and it's heartbreaking. But it's just one part of the picture. Homelessness in the UK goes much wider and deeper than that. Right now, nearly 300,000 people in Britain, from individuals to whole families, are without a safe and secure home.
We have record levels of temporary accommodation. Lots of councils have no other option because there isn't enough genuinely affordable housing.
And nearly half of that number are children.
It was quite a difficult time for us all. And my mum was experiencing the pain of her relationship, trying to find a place to live, but also me and my brother starting to fall out because we were sharing a room. So there was definitely a lot of strain on the family.
But things don't need to be this way. Housing specialists are now saying that with joined-up thinking and a well-resourced partnership between government and the private sector, we now have an opportunity to ensure that everyone has a home they can call their own.
Investing in social housing alongside increased government subsidy would deliver more homes to communities that really, truly need them.
I'm David Baker, and in this special podcast, I'm going to be finding out more about what causes homelessness, the effect it has on all of us, and how we can finally end homelessness for good. All of us have misconceptions about homelessness.
Lots of people see people rough sleeping as the only form of homelessness, and we know that that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Francesca Albanese is the Executive Director of Policy and Social Change at Crisis, the UK homelessness charity.
Yes, there are people who are forced to sleep on the streets and extremely dangerous and isolating. But we also know that there's lots of people who experience homelessness who are in temporary accommodation like hostels and bed and breakfast and nightly paid hotels, but also sofa surfing. And that's often can be quite dangerous and people not knowing from one night to the next where they're going to be sleeping. And we also know that there are other hidden forms of homelessness like sleeping on public transport and unconventional kind of accommodation like garages and sheds.
And that means we may be meeting people who have no secure home much more often than we imagine.
People working in shops and in catering where we know that there is lower wages. We heard about people who were walking all through the night because they didn't have anywhere to put their head down, but then would turn up at work and still do a day's work.
The effect of not having a secure place to live, not knowing where you're going to sleep that night, can be profound and long-lasting.
I've worked in housing and homelessness for a long time, and I've seen firsthand the detrimental impact it has on people's lives. So it could be about restricting job opportunities. It might also be about relationships. There are definite impacts on psychological health and well-being.
And Francesca says many of those people in Britain who don't have a place they can call home have been forced into homelessness by an unexpected event.
That can be down to job loss. If they're in a low-paid job, we know it's more likely that you're going to be at risk of not being able to afford your rent payments. Sometimes as well, relationship breakdown can also be a driver, and also in some cases, a bereavement. All of those factors are exacerbated if you don't have a high enough income or your housing is unaffordable or you're living in an area where it's very difficult to access other forms of accommodation.
Many of those people end up in temporary accommodation. Right now in Britain, there are more than 1.5 million people on waiting lists for social housing. And at current housing levels, that will take decades to clear. But local authorities still have an obligation to house people in need of somewhere to live. And for that, they often turn to hotels and bed and breakfasts.
we're in a situation now where we have record levels of temporary accommodation. Temporary accommodation should be temporary, but lots of councils have no other option because there isn't enough genuinely affordable housing.
And often that means a family sharing what can be a very cramped space.
For many people, that's sleeping in the same room. It could be nightly paid hotel accommodation where people don't know from one night to the next what's going to happen. For some people, it's also about shared living facilities. That can mean sharing kitchens, it can mean sharing bathrooms, and often it's very poor quality.
And as we've heard, many of those living in conditions like this are children. There are about 145,000 children living in temporary accommodation in England alone. And that's having a serious effect on their lives.
When children are moved out of area, often their schooling suffers because they can't necessarily get into a school in that area. Only having one room to live in and not having anywhere to do your homework, not having anywhere to play, not being able to go outside does have lasting impacts.
The effect of substandard housing on people's lives, especially on the lives of children, is something that Rosanna Hallam knows about firsthand. She grew up in social housing and is now drawing on that experience as a student of real estate and planning at Manchester University.
So I lived with my mum, my dad and my brother in a block of flats, council flats, two bedroom, one bathroom apartment. You know, it was very humble, like I shared a room with my brother up until he was 14 and I was 9. I think the upside was that we had a place to live that was relatively safe and warm, but the downside is that you're living in quite confined space and that definitely caused some strain in our relationship.
Things got even more strained when her mum and dad decided to separate.
Yes, when I was around 6 or 7, my mum wanted a divorce from my dad. And she went to the council looking for some help and guidance on how she could take me and my brother out of the house into a new home. It was quite a difficult time for us all, but especially for her. My mum was experiencing the pain of her relationship, trying to find a place to live, but also me and my brother starting to fall out a little bit because we were sharing a room.
Neither Rosanna's mum or dad could afford to move out.
My parents moved into the smaller bedroom so we could have the bigger bedroom for ourselves with the bunk bed. So there was definitely a lot of strain on the family. There was a lot of heated discussions. We had to wait for the council basically to allow us all to move forward with our lives. It took like a good 3 years for them to be able to find us somewhere suitable to live.
When the family finally did move, Rosanna found herself in an area with a much more mixed demographic. She jokes that some of her friends at school who lived in bigger houses were taken aback when they came to hers.
They would just say things like, where's the toilet? I say, it's upstairs. They say, is there not one downstairs? And I say, no, it's upstairs.
But she says living and mixing with people of different economic backgrounds gave her a broader outlook on life and more opportunities.
Being exposed to different kinds of people and better schools definitely changed the way I looked at my life chances, going to university, something I never really dreamt of before.
And she'd like to see that taken into account when, as she hopes, the government starts building new social housing stock.
I think a lot of the time in these big developments, it's very obvious where the private rented housing stops and the social housing, council housing begins. And I feel like the integration of those two would definitely change people's chances. Things would be a lot better.
What would you say to someone who said, well, you know, I've spent a lot on my apartment, I don't really want to mix with the social housing people around the corner?
If you met someone, you don't know where they live at first glance. You meet them, you talk to them, you get unbiased opinion. And then if you see where they live, does your opinion change? That says more about you and your judgment than it does about them.
For both Francesca and Rosanna, the primary need is for Britain to build more affordable houses, something Francesca says we've fallen far behind on.
We're in a situation now where we haven't built enough homes for such a long time and we are losing more social housing a year than we're building. People on low incomes are more likely to be much further away from secure, affordable, stable housing.
Which is why Crisis and Lloyds Banking Group are jointly calling for the UK to build 1 million more homes for social rent by 2033. Something Chris Yao, a director at Lloyds National Housing Team, says it's going to require a big input from the private sector.
There is no magic money tree, to coin a phrase, and neither the public or private sectors can tackle the issue alone. I think that's why our chief exec, Charlie Nunn, has convened our social housing initiative, where we've brought together key influencers, key stakeholders across housing, finance, public and third sectors, all of them with the ability, the resource, and more importantly, the will to really make a difference, tackle the housing crisis. Any viable sort of solution really needs to really leverage that private capital into the sector.
To make that partnership work, he says, the government needs to give developers the confidence to invest in social housing. You only have to look around Britain's towns and cities to see that there's a lot of residential building going on. But almost all of that is for rent or sale at market prices. Developers are wary of investing in social housing, fearing that they may not get a good return on their money. But that, says Chris, could be alleviated by the government guaranteeing long-term rental income.
What we would like from the government is to set a 10-year housing strategy with a rent policy that doesn't change mid-term, so that it gives firms the certainty to invest in their new build programmes for the future.
Because they'll have a certain guaranteed income over those 10 years.
Correct.
And that would give tenants greater security too.
The more stable a tenancy is, the more ability people lay down their roots and create their home from a house. The social housing, it really resonates with me on a personal level. For background, I'm first generation born in the UK. First generations have the privilege of being educated, going to university, etc. My family came from a relatively deprived rural farming village in Hong Kong. Luckily enough, they eventually secured themselves their own council house. I think to an extent, it was only them at that point. The key enabler of what that provided them was A, they could set their own roots, create a platform for them to really start saving money.
Francesco agrees that rent stability is core to reducing homelessness. One of the leading causes of homelessness at the moment, she says, is the fact that private sector rents are unpredictable and rising sharply, which means that people can suddenly find themselves unable to stay in the home they live in.
We've seen an increase in the price of renting. That's really skyrocketed over the last few years, and it's had a massive impact on homelessness. What we're seeing in our services is lots of people coming to us because they've been pushed into homelessness. Their landlord has needed to put the rent up, or they're competing for properties and they can't afford them and they have nowhere else to go.
Consistent rents and predictable returns for investors are just two of what Chris sees as numerous benefits that will come from investing in Britain's social housing stock. Others, he says, include what would be a very welcome boost to the UK's economy.
If we're to build over 1 million social homes in the UK over the next decade, that would be able to generate over 140,000 new jobs within the construction sector within the first year alone. It would generate, say, 5 billion of savings to the NHS in terms of welfare.
And he says those 145,000 children living in temporary accommodation would be able to get the education they deserve.
So something I read recently was one in four children living in temporary accommodation would fail to get any GCSEs, and that compares to, what, one in 10 for those in more satisfactory housing.
So why is Lloyds Bank involved in all of this?
At Lloyds Bank Group, our vision is helping Britain prosper. We will only succeed if the UK economy succeeds, and the future prosperity of the economy is underpinned by giving access to quality and sustainable homes that are affordable for individuals and our communities.
Lloyds, he says, is uniquely placed to bring that about.
I think we're the only financial services provider that really goes across the housing ecosystem. So we've got a really unique scale and size to convene and influence the market to make a difference. We are the biggest provider of mortgages to first-time buyers. We support the largest national PLC house builders, all the way through to small developers of homes. Through our housing growth partnership, we're able to provide patient capital to support smaller house builders, deliver real social impacts.
And he says, Lloyd's strength is going to be in connecting all those private entities involved in social housing with the government, so they can work together to end homelessness in Britain for good.
What is really important is that partnership approach, really. Investing in social housing alongside the government, providing increased central subsidy, will then crowd in additional private capital and fundamentally will be delivering more homes to communities that really, truly need them.
University student Rosanna is passionate about the fact that decent housing is fundamental for a good and successful life.
It's that safety and security of knowing you've always got somewhere to go back to. After work, after school, it's a place where you can relax, it's a place where you can feed yourself and look after your kids or your family, and how much a difference that can have on like your life chances and how you progress through life.
Francesca from Crisis agrees.
We can end homelessness, and actually that should drive our motivations, because we should want everyone to have a home, to have a safe and stable home. The solution to homelessness is more homes, and ultimately a society and a world where homelessness doesn't exist anymore benefits us all. It's definitely something we as a society can achieve.
I do truly believe that safe and secure housing gives people a platform to really succeed and thrive in life. Housing is critical to the UK economy and its future prosperity. It has been proven that investing in social housing will not only give people the chance to thrive and succeed, but it contributes to the UK economy, contributes to wider society, whether that's job creation or giving our children better life outcomes. Housing associations, they're poised and ready to help tackle the crisis. I think it just needs more certainty and government support to help us deliver on our ambitions.
I'm David Baker. This special podcast episode is sponsored by Lloyds Banking Group and produced by Politico Studio.